All right, what's up? Another episode of the Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. We're here with Mike Hughes, first ever in studio, professionally done. I'm pumped about it. Excited to have you here, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I was excited to get you on because, you know, you have an extensive amateur background and a lot of Golden Gloves experience.
For sure. Yeah, I've done the Golden Gloves like seven times.
Seven times, yeah. So I didn't even know that. I knew you were a champ, though.
Mm-hmm.
So before we dive into that, though, I definitely want to talk a little bit about your sort of journalism background. I know you got some experience with that.
Yeah, well, this was crazy. So I got my crossroads in life, in a sense, kind of happened. I caught a felony charge for a fight that I got into. I broke a kid's like orbital bone, and I was facing like 2 years in prison or something. I was having problems getting a job, obviously, because, you know, record and stuff.
Was this when you were like a teenager?
This was in my junior, the end of my junior year of college, I think. The guy was from my school. We got into altercation at a party. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
And he pressed charges. Like, I thought I was okay, but like a month later, I get a knock on my door at like 10 p.m. and I'm like, that's kind of suspect. I look outside, I see two guys in suits, and I'm like, oh, I know what's about to happen. It was detectives, brought me in, questioning for hours, all that stuff. So that was like a kind of a crossroads where I was like, yo, because I was going down like that type of path for a while. And I was having problems getting a job when I left college. It's like I got a degree, but now no one's trying to hire me because I have a record.
Yeah.
It got dropped to a misdemeanor, thankfully, but still, it's like a violent one. So one of my friends from Vlad TV, he just was like, yo, bro, I can get you a job over here as a writing gig, journalism stuff. I was like, sure. Never taken a journalism class in my life, but I can do it. Went over there. They hired me. And then I started, I created this platform on Vlad TV for what's called battle rap. It's pretty much like the rap version of boxing, like combative rapping. Did that for like 3 years. And while I was at Vlad TV, I won the Golden Gloves. So,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, but the journalism stuff was cool, man. I got a lot of experience from that.
So the rap thing, did you kind of just jump into that, or is that something you
was a fan of battle rap since I was like, I don't know, like 16 17, and it was kind of like a dream come true to like get to meet these people in real life. They're not like now, they're like way more famous than they used to be, but for me, like when I would meet the guys on the street, I'm like, oh my god, I have to like control myself because I don't want to be like too much of a fan.
Yeah,
but it was cool, man. It was just something that I knew because Vlad TV is a hip-hop oriented type of website, so I was like, this will translate well, and it literally just took off, and I became like, if people like want to recognize me, like the first like battle rap journalist. It was pretty cool.
That is cool, man.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Did you kind of like pick up on that? Like, I saw, you know, you grew up in Hell's Kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like obviously, you know, New York and hip hop, like
yeah,
one and the same. So like, I don't know if growing up, if that was something like you were involved in, like
that's one thing I gotta say, like, because I come from an artistic family. Like my whole block, Manhattan Plaza, MP, it's like a mixture. It has its blend of the street side. It does have so many artists. Like, you ever watch Lost?
Yeah.
Ben from Lost, he like lived in my apartment complex.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, it's weird. It's like a big blend. Do you know that show The Affair on Showtime?
I haven't seen that, no.
There's a guy that's from that show that's in my, so it's
so
weird.
So there's actors,
Alicia Keys is from
musicians.
My block.
Yeah,
yeah, Alicia
yeah.
Keys. So my family's like acting background and stuff, so I just always like knew how to like perform, in a sense, and like interviewing people and journalism was just kind of like a different type of performance to me, honestly. It just kind of came natural. Just talk to people, have a good time, you know.
Man. And that relates right to fighting, right, and boxing. I mean, like performing, like people look at it
mm-hmm.
from the outside, they're like, oh, you know, it's just kind of a brutal sport, but it's really not, you know. I mean, when you really look at it, I mean, there's so much technique involved, and
mm-hmm.
of course it is violent, but it's a lot of people look at it like art at the end of the day. So I mean, when you were starting out, like, is that kind of the motivation getting into boxing a little bit, like kind of express yourself or find some way to an outlet for yourself to get that creative, maybe more aggressive side out of you?
Yeah, I mean, well, for me, boxing, I was just kind of always born with like a fighter spirit. Like I remember, I think I was like 4 years old or something. My dad used to watch a lot of old Ali tapes, Jack Johnson documentaries, Jack Dempsey. So I just grew up like watching boxing, like the old school stuff. And I remember all my friends when I was young, they watched wrestling, and I would watch wrestling and I'm like, you guys know this is fake. Like, there's no way you could think this is real. So I just always like gravitated towards like combat and stuff like that. I wasn't raised in like a bad household to like fight and stuff, but like I just gravitated towards it. My parents didn't actually support the idea of me being a fighter. So when I was in college, I was like, look, if y'all want me to finish and get my degree, I'm gonna start fighting. Cause like,
was that when you started to take it like really serious in college?
That's when I started boxing. I started boxing at 19.
So later. Yeah,
a late start. I did Taekwondo growing up, and I did MMA on and off when I was in high school. But like my dad, like, kind of like, he, I'm not trying to like bash him, but honestly, Tiger Showmans, they wanted me to join their professional fight team when I was 15. I told him, I was like, yo, like, I'm a pro fighter. And he was like, just because I'm also writing and stuff, he's like, yo, stick with writing, that's what you're good at, that's your, what you're best at. He was always worried about, you know, brain damage and stuff and fighting. So it kind of discouraged me, and then I just like stopped going to train and just started doing like stupid stuff and getting into trouble. So then it was like, yeah, I just kind of got fed up. I was like, look, I'm lost, I have like a case now, this is ridiculous. I need to find a purpose, and boxing became that.
Yeah, definitely. So talk to me a little bit about the Golden Gloves. So obviously you started to take it real serious in college. Talk about that development, and you know, when you sort of made that jump into Golden Gloves. I know you said seven times, so I didn't
even
know.
The first time I did it, I was with my very first trainer, Bernard, and loved to him, but I didn't fine-tune the skills too much, because my friend brought me to the gym. It's called Kingsway, it's now closed down, and he kind of hyped me up for being like just a fighter from outside of the ring. So the very first day I went into the boxing gym, they had me spar people, like my very first day. So I was just pretty much boxing people, just with like street fighting and like MMA kind of skills. I had my first fight at 20, and I did the Golden Gloves the first time when I was 20. I won my first fight by TKO, and I was like mad hyped. I'm like, I'm about to win this whole tournament. The very next time I fought, how could, like, graphic can we talk?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know? All right, so the real story behind my first loss. I fought this kid, rest in peace, because he died a few years later, like some weird medical thing. His name was Idrissa Skip Kamara. Everyone called him Skip. I didn't know he was like a national champion, all this type of stuff. I'm like, this kid looks like a regular person. So I fought him. He beat the shit out of me. And he like hit me with a left hook. I think he gave me a concussion. Definitely gave me a concussion. I had headaches for like days, but undiagnosed. But before the fight, my ex-girlfriend from college, I didn't really know like what you should and should not do before a fight. So like we hooked up, you know what I mean? Like 2 hours before I left my house. So when I got to the place, I'm like in the ring, I'm like, yo, my legs feel kind of shaky right now, man, damn. And yeah, I paid the price, and I learned from that, even though I'm gonna be honest, I learned from it, like what could happen, but I still didn't learn like not to do that.
Yeah, it takes your legs away, right?
Yo, man, that was, I
you
was
tested
like,
that. Yeah, I had you tested no, that theory.
It was bad, bro, it was bad. But yeah, then I was in boxing, and I was going to, like, I was having issues outside, not just with the legal thing, but other situations and stuff, and I was feeling kind of lost. So there was this one situation that occurred. I got with a new trainer at Kingsway. His name was Jose Rodriguez. Loved him. He held me down so much outside of the gym. But I was having some major problems, and I told him, I said, yo, bro, like, I called him, like, crying one day. I was like, look, I'm leaving everything. Like, I'm about to join, like, the Marines and stuff. And he just, like, pleaded. He was like, yo, Mike, just please, like, stay with me. Let's try for the Golden Gloves one more time. Let's see. And I was like, all right. So I stuck around, started fighting with him, got, like, a couple fights before the Golden Gloves, was beating everybody, jumped into the gloves. I was kind of, like, unknown. Like, no one knew who I was. They were just like, who is this guy?
Yeah, like, well, how are you... you know, having that success early on, like, would you say, like, your natural athleticism, or was it your... Because, I mean, to jump right into a Golden Gloves, like, for people that don't know, like, that's a...
Nah, yeah,
that's,
legit.
Like, a very legit tournament, you know? I mean, with guys who most... I mean, everyone in there pretty much has pro aspirations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the year that I won, it was 2012, and I had... There were Aaron... There were like four guys in my division that shouldn't have been in my division. They all, I won in the novice, so you're supposed to have no more than like 9 or 10 fights. But there were like four guys that had like on record like 20 to 50 fights. And surprisingly enough, I beat all four of them.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always had good fight instincts. You know what I mean? You grow up in New York, and if you indulge in fights outside of a ring, like in the streets and stuff, you just learn certain instinctual things that could just like help you out. So I just had good fight instincts, honestly. I guess you could say I'm pretty athletic, but when you talk about, as we will get there maybe later on, my boy Khalif from
yeah.
my gym,
yeah.
certain people have different levels of athleticism, but you know, yeah, man, I went in and I was just focused. I trained so hard for that whole tournament. Like, it was insane. I would train like 5 hours a day. It was nuts, 4 or 5 hours, run like 5-6 miles a day, train 6 days a week. It was crazy.
What was your style like? Were you trying to like get guys out of there earlier, or were you?
I've never known myself to be like just like a one hitter type of guy. I'm just always like a workhorse. Some people in the gym that I'm at Church Street now, they call me either La Machina, the machine, or Machine Gun Mike, because I throw a lot of punches.
So just high volume and high just wear volume guy, and just guys. Work.
Yeah. Yeah, I just try to stay relentless, but at the same time, I don't want to be like pinned as like a one trick pony. I try to just pride myself in just being able to adapt, because there's been fights where I've started off like losing the first round, clearly maybe the first round and a half, and I always make like, you know, adjustments, and then I can pull out a win later on, hopefully. But yeah, but volume is my thing.
So on that championship run in the Golden Gloves,
mm-hmm.
Take me through that and tell people a little bit about how it works in terms of, you know, you're fighting back to back day, like
yeah,
multiple times a
right.
day, that sort of.
It wasn't multiple times a day, but depending on how many people are in your division, you have to fight either, you could fight literally straight to the finals if there's just you and one other person, but I had to fight 5 times. I had to fight a lot. My first fight was in like Newburgh upstate, and I fought this southpaw from Cops and Kids, and I'd seen him years prior and I knew he had a lot of fights. I was like, he's not supposed to be in my division, but I'm not gonna complain.
And which Golden Gloves was this for you?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm working with him, fighting is like super close, but like I make adjustments. I made adjustments in the last round and I was just like tagging him with some real clean shots, close the show. Second time I fought was in Brooklyn. Deep in Brooklyn, I fought this guy. It was kind of just like unanimous, just outworked him. The third fight was the one that kind of put me on the map, so to speak, because I fought this kid named Aaron Fulford, who was supposed to be like the favorite to win everything. He just won in the summer the New York tournament. He's on record at the time having like a 30-3 record, which is crazy. Like, you shouldn't be in my division, but and he hit real hard. So I got matched him in the corners. I remember when like they called me Michael Hughes, they introduced me, it was just like crickets. And then when it was Aaron Fulford, everyone in the place just went crazy. And I just pretty much shut everybody up. And everyone that was cheering for him in that fight just started cheering for me by the end of it, because I just like, I won't say I destroyed him, but like I did very good work.
Yeah.
He hit me with some hard shots though. That boy's power is no joke. The semifinals fight, I fought this guy named Graciano Yancey. Shorter dude, jacked arms, like massive. And I could tell from like fights before, he used to bust guys' face up. I'm like, he probably hits real hard. And this was also the first time I fought in Staten Island since I lost to that kid, Skip, the Golden Gloves before. So I was nervous. I'm like, oh man, this is like redemption time. I'm in Staten Island again. And I remember the first punch he threw was like, well, the first like hard punch he threw was like a right hook. And I like jumped back and it like just went past my chest, and it was so hard that I felt like a gust of wind like hit my chest. I was like, oh no, I'm not getting touched by this. So I was just dancing for like 2 rounds. He got tired and I was just sticking to moving.
Yeah,
like I said, I adapt. I'm not
that
just
muscular build, right? Like, you gas quick probably, right?
He gassed quick, but I was also touching him a lot. Like, I was just pop move, pop 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 move, just sticking in and out. So I kind of displayed my boxing ability. And then the third round, I just pressed him. And then the last fight I had was with this guy named Yurik Mamedov. And he's a pro now. He has like a belt in the pros. Real strong French dude. We spar since. Like, Yuri's mad cool. That's my boy.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. Like, when I matched up with him in the finals, I was nervous, because the very first fight I had that year when we were in Newburgh, I saw him and I was like, yo, coach, like, we gotta watch for this dude, bro. He's kind of a beast. Like, he's just like a pressure, relentless dude. He's honestly a little bit more relentless than I am in a sense. And I saw like footage of him like fighting back in France, winning all these big medals and stuff. So I was a little bit nervous, not gonna lie. And also it was at Madison Square Garden. Like, that's like right in my neighborhood. It was
crazy. How cool is that?
That was incredible. You don't realize how big a venue is until you're there early when no one's there and you see just empty seats and you're like, yo, this space is huge, crazy. Man, huge. But, and the crazy part is for the finals, I trained so hard for that that my weight class was 141. I came in weighing 137 pounds.
Wow.
Like, so low. They were like, yo, go eat a steak. I'm like, I got you.
And how many days in between are these?
Oh, I mean, nah, the Golden Glove fights are spread out. So the Golden Gloves, you might have like a week, 2 weeks, three weeks. It depends on, you know, where
so
you go.
So are guys cutting weight a little bit? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you always have to cut weight and keep it down.
But it can't be too drastic, right? And
in terms of the cut,
yeah,
it depends on how you maintain. Yeah. Some people, they'll come in on weight and then they'll have 2 weeks to go for the next fight, and then they'll come in like 5 pounds over, and you got to lose it within 2 hours or you're done. But yeah, when I won that, so to tie it all into the legal thing, with that situation, there were two other people that were involved, and I was trying my hardest not to get anyone else caught in that situation. I lost like one of my best friends from high school. He thought I like, you know, snitched on him and stuff. But I'm like, my man, I know where everyone in your family is. Like, if I wanted to get you caught, you would be caught in like 48 hours.
Yeah.
So one of the guys involved was also from my block. So to make sure that he didn't get caught in any situation with, you know, detectives. Sorry, I like got out of the shower like recently, and my hair drips. And it's also
snowing.
Yeah, you
had the snow.
My hair drips
for
like 4 hours.
So.
Yeah. So I'm like, ah, get off me. But for like the entire time I was training for the Golden Gloves, like 9 months, I didn't talk to any of my friends from my block just to protect that one guy from getting, you know, pinned. So I'm in the finals. The fight goes on, the final bell rings, take my headgear off, and I just hear like certain screams of voices I haven't like heard in a while, but I recognize them, and I look into the crowd, and all my friends from my block came out to support me, even though I hadn't talked to them in like 9 months. So that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
My mom was there, my sister, my ex-girl, and that was the first time I remember thinking like, yo, like I just really like gave my mom something to be proud of instead of like me getting into some stupid situations, you know. So that was like a really dope thing.
Yeah, I mean, to accomplish that at MSG,
yeah, it was incredible.
I mean, for a kid from
that
New
York,
that
was the last year that they had it at MSG.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I think they came back to it, but it's not called the Golden Gloves anymore, it's called Ringmasters now. So I think that was the last time. It was awesome, man. Was,
yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what that's like walking into MSG, kid from New York, and winning the Golden Gloves like that. After that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And was it it was a tough fight, right? I mean,
it was tooth and nail, I'll be honest. Like I said, my boy Yuri, bro, he's a beast. I was nervous in the fight because he was pressing me so much, but I'm a very good counterpuncher as well, so I was just fighting off, you know, my back foot, fighting off the ropes, catching my clean shots. I hurt him with one left hook. I threw like my punch numbers, I threw like a 5-6-3, like two uppercuts and a hook, and I hit him so hard with the hook. I remember I felt like my whole like body just vibrate, and you saw his legs kind of buckle for a second, so I was like, I got him.
Yeah,
but he always holds a lot, so he held me. He's a smart fighter, he's tough. There's another fighter from my block named Christina Cruz. She holds the record in the amateurs for the most Golden Glove wins in history. She has like 10 Golden Gloves. So the fact that like I was fighting on the same like night as her, I wanted to come out victorious. Yeah, I wanted to be like another one from the block. So it was awesome, man. Yeah, you couldn't duplicate it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was literally the best.
So now you know, you're at Church Street, you're training people there, and you know, before the interview started, you mentioned how you're starting to get ready for a professional debut.
Yep.
So talk to me a little bit about Church Street as a whole. I mean, it's an awesome gym. So
yeah,
such
fantastic.
A cool gym, and a lot of great people there. But talk about training people there at Church Street.
Gotcha.
And is that something that you really have a passion for? Maybe when you're done with competing yourself, you'd maybe want to train some people, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or pro fighters or
Definitely. I mean, the thing that's funny is like for Church, when I started training people technically in Taekwondo when I was like growing up, like my instructor would have me teach like some of the little kids classes. And then when I got to St. John's, I started a boxing program with another guy in like my last semester of St. John's. I already started teaching people, and I had to leave Vlad TV, the journalism job, because Vlad tried to like dog. He was like, I'm not trying to bash him, but I'm just being honest from an employee standpoint. He was a little bit harsh at times. So there was one time, my last time, well, not last time, last time doing Golden Gloves at 141, 2015, he asked me to work an overtime shift on a Saturday. And I told him, hey, like I just told his wife is HR. I told your wife that I can't do it. I have a fight. And he said, look, Mike, you're not understanding me. You're going to work the overtime shift. And I was like, you have like five other writers. I'm not the only person. I can't do it. I worked last week. And he's like, either you're going to work it or you're terminating yourself. So I was just like, I like physically can't do that. You know, there's nothing I could do. So I tried to negotiate. I offered to give him like half of my paycheck. I'll write in the morning from home. I'll write at night. I'll go to my fight. He said, no, I offered to give him my entire paycheck. I'll write in the morning, cover some articles, write at night. He said, no. So I had to quit Vlad TV abruptly on the phone with him, like in the Bronx, leaving my gym at that time. Because he wanted me to work OT shift or, yeah, I don't know. He was just, yeah, kind of a harsh dude. Sorry, where are we going with this?
We were just talking a little bit about, like, Church Street
Church
training.
Church Street, yes. Yeah. So that's to tie it all in. So from church, after I did the Golden Glove, sorry about that, I started working independently as a trainer on my own. I had no like value for my like price and like my time. So what I started doing was I was like charging people like $20 for an hour. Like it was hilarious. I would go like all the way deep in Queens, train someone like 7 a.m. for like $20. I didn't know any better. I was like, all right, whatever. I got to church, started working as a front desk person only, not even as a trainer. And it became like an accident that they like put me on the schedule because someone like missed their class, so they needed someone to cover, and I jumped in. And then there was another time, one of the guys, he like overbooked his hour, so they needed someone to train him, and they knew I had experience, so I just did that. And eventually I just fell into it, just like full time. I left the desk, and I've grown such an appreciation for the life of a trainer, because it's very, very tiring, but it's something that I really like to do. It's awesome.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, like, I love to train, but there is, like, a clear difference, obviously, as you know, with, like, the boxer size and, like, actually
boxer size,
and, like,
yeah,
actually
yeah.
training.
Right.
And, like, you know, I like both, honestly, like, you know, taking some classes and stuff just to get a workout in. Mm-hmm. But there's another side of I'm going to get a workout in while actually learning something about,
yeah,
like, how to actually throw the punches, how to defend yourself, your footwork, everything like that. So I mean, obviously people learning from you, people like yourself with real experience in is like, I feel like people nowadays are kind of losing that. Like there's a lot of boxer size, which is great. You know, people want to get in shape and use boxing a little bit to do that. But, you know, it's important to understand the basics.
Yeah. I always tell people in my classes, I have a saying, I'm like, there's two types of boxing in today's world. There's Instagram boxing and then there's real boxing.
Right.
A lot of you see people do these quick, you know,
the combos. Yeah, it's like,
bro, anyone can literally do that. You just have to rehearse it enough
times. You're just
times.
Playing patty cake. Like, you're not
playing patty cake. Try to do those little fast slips in a real situation, you're going to get hit. Try to do those funny blocks, you're going to get hit. I can do the Instagram stuff if that's what you want, but I come from fight boxing.
Yeah.
People,
I think people like see that maybe from like Floyd. You think of like on the 24/7, then he's just kind of like going like this real slow, and Roger Mayweather's doing
it.
And like it looks great. It's like, oh man, like this guy is just, he's doing it in his sleep, but it's like,
to be
honest,
he's
just kind of getting warm there. He's not working through the reactions.
Just,
like,
exactly. Like reactive type things. To be honest, Floyd Mayweather, love to him because he's one of the best ever, without a doubt, hands down, to do it. But he changed a lot with boxing. From a training standpoint, he made it cool for people to just learn Instagram fitness boxing rather than fundamental fight stuff. To get to Floyd's level, you should need to go through the basics first. He also made it so that pro fighters now, you're so much under the microscope and there's so much more pressure on you to remain undefeated. Like, let a person go from 25-0 to then 25-1, and their next fight that they lose, it might be over. Back in the day, Gotti, Leonard, Ali, whoever, Knight Tyson, whoever you want to name,
100%, yeah,
they all had several losses and they could still draw a big fight.
100%.
AJ versus Ruiz too. talking about, oh, if he loses a second time, his career is over. What? Come on, bro. Two times.
People have short
because of
attention
Mayweather.
Span
respect
now,
him. He raised the level of perfection. Something that I did learn to become more appreciative of in terms of just like being a trainer is the fact that when it comes to price, a trainer will charge, a boxing trainer, whatever he charges, and then you compare that to a weightlifting trainer, charge whatever he charges. The weightlifting trainer, respect to all of them, but for the most part, their job is setting you up with your station, making sure form's correct, and then they, all right, come on, pick it up, da-da, you got it, go. Boxing trainers, we have to be super hands-on, physical, doing all this type of stuff, and then it comes the big point of, all right, so now your client or whoever it is you're working with wants to spar with you. Now, you, a guy like myself, I have this one dude I train like 6:30, 7 a.m. three times a week. He's 6'3", 210, 220 pounds. He's trying to spar me. He doesn't actually know how hard he hits.
Right.
And I'm like over here like 147. Now, granted, I have skills, but we as trainers, as boxers, like we have to do like, in all honesty, the most work, and we put ourselves actually in a lot of danger in
for
a lot
sure,
of situations,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But people don't ever see that. They're like, oh, you're just a boxing trainer. Like, no. You shouldn't just get to punch me.
No,
I'm
going
to raise
my
price and pay that, please.
Yeah. Right.
Something I learned.
Yeah, the sparring thing is kind of funny because it's like you're still throwing punches here. This isn't really we're not just playing like one-on-one pickup basketball.
Nah,
like,
it's not
no, like it's not,
not
the same. Like it's
yep.
really not the same. So
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not I don't have an amateur boxing background or anything like that, but I've sparred
mm-hmm.
and you know, I like to train just because I'm a fan of the sport,
right?
But I love to train too. It's like a blast for me to do it, and I really do like learning, so that way I understand what I'm watching is the biggest thing for me. And I'm like, I gotta get in there and spar if I'm gonna mm-hmm. be talking about this, because I don't want to be one of those guys.
I respect that. Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
For
so
sure.
Like I plan to continue to spar and whatever
mm-hmm.
but like when I first got into it, you know, I quickly realized I'm like I knew what I was like getting into, but
mm-hmm.
it just reaffirmed it to me. I'm like, this is not, even if you're quote unquote light sparring, taking
it
easy, it's
not
like
a joke. Yeah,
you're still getting popped right in the face
mm-hmm.
like, you know, a lot of the head guards, like your chin is out.
It's definitely out.
Your chin is out. I mean,
your nose gets damaged, everything. Like, you could punch wrong, your wrist could get hurt, your hand could break. There's, even if you go light sometimes, you never know. Like, it's, people have to appreciate the process of trainers, fighters, anyone who does it. You know what I mean? You have to appreciate it because it's legit, not a joke.
Yeah.
And you can hit someone with a light jab today, and because they took a hard shot yesterday, that light jab can, you know what I'm saying? You never know.
Yeah,
you never
for
know.
Sure. For yeah. sure. And, like, even in the gym with understanding, a lot of these fighters, like, their biggest wars are in the gym.
Yeah.
Like,
spar wars.
People see the fights, and they see what's in the ring, and they're like, oh, my God. Like, either that was a war, or this guy got out of there real clean, and
mm-hmm.
it's like, good. Like, he didn't take damage.
Mm-hmm.
His point is not to take damage, although, obviously, for the fans, it's fun to see a war.
Yeah.
But, like, these guys, even, like, a guy like Floyd, like, you don't really know. I mean, behind closed doors, no one sees the spars.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone through who knows how many. I'm
yeah.
sure he's been in some battles and spars, right. Like, 100%, because everyone has.
Mm-hmm. Everyone has a bad day in the office. The thing is, with sparring, it's weird. It's like, if you're going to have a bad day and get beat up, you want it to be in sparring. Everyone gets beat up at some point in the time. Like, preparing for a
even
fight.
Errol Spence, he mentioned that against
mm-hmm.
he's like
yeah.
Floyd is, you know how Floyd is
mm-hmm.
like he rarely will like
give that credit,
discount
yeah.
himself in any way
mm-hmm.
you know, so
yeah.
But he was talking about, I saw some interviews like, yeah, you know, I sparred Errol some years back, and like, he definitely gave me some good work.
Yeah
and just
yeah.
for Floyd to
I
say
think he
that,
said that about Devin Haney too.
Yeah,
I think he said about both of them. Yeah, I mean, it's legit, man. People, like you said, they don't see the process, and the process is filled with so much pain, honestly, and just overcoming that pain. So yeah, it's no joke at all, man. No joke.
Not at all.
Yeah.
So you're jumping into the pro ranks now.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned who's your head trainer?
I'm gonna start working with Don Saxby out of Gleason's gym in Brooklyn. He has, you know, a bunch of pro fighters.
Yeah.
His like main guy that I know of is Mikel LaPierre. Call him Slick Mick. He fought once on the Zone for a world title. He has a couple guys, the Burrell brothers, Jude Franklin, who I'm going to spar with on Thursday. Actually, he's undefeated so far, doing very, very well. So, yeah, man, I know he can get the ball rolling, and that's what I want. So
definitely. Yeah. And at this point, I mean, you're obviously not a young fighter,
nope.
right, to be jumping into the pro ranks,
nope.
but you have an amateur background.
Mm-hmm.
There's many ways to look at it, right? Like, you started boxing later, so you haven't taken a lot of damage. So it's like,
yeah.
there's pros and cons,
right,
everything. But I guess your mindset jumping into the pro ranks now, are you looking to, you know, let's get right into it, let's be super active, like first, second year, or are you trying to, your mindset going in?
Right now, I feel more ready than I ever have. You know, I have more awareness, more experience, just better understanding of everything. Like, I'm in the ring sparring, and I, like, see things that I didn't see before, you know, and I've fought some beasts in the amateurs. You know, I've really fought some tough dudes, and I sparred some real tough dudes. So I feel super ready right now. Once I get my first fight down, if he calls me 2 weeks later, a week, as long as I'm good to go and I'm healthy, I'm with it. Like, I'll definitely like to stay as active as possible. I don't want to be one of those guys that's, especially when you're starting out in the pros, you want to get active. When you start making, you know, like, big money later on, then you can start doing 1, 2, 3 fights a year.
Yeah.
But I want to get busy. If I can get, you know, 6, 8 fights in a year, 10 fights in a year, I'm cool with that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's very busy.
That's busy. But
that's very,
you know,
busy.
What's funny? It's like, that's busy for today. But
when
you think back to, like, the 1920s, 30s, 40s,
oh,
dudes would fight like 4 times in a month. It was insane. Like, with no headgear, horsehair gloves. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I want to stay active, bro. I want to stay active.
And are you going to be, I guess, starting out, like, your first fight? How many rounds are you looking?
I would probably just do the standard, just start out 4 rounds. If they get me a good deal for, like, a 6-round fight for my first one, as long as, like, the financial aspect
is
good.
Because you want to build up to that, obviously,
yeah,
and, like, feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as it makes sense, then I'll do it. I'm conditioned for that right now. Like,
mm-hmm.
I spar all the time, endless rounds. But I'll probably just start out how most people start out, Floyd Mayweather, Oscar De La Hoya, everyone, 4-round fight. May the best man win. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not about to come out here doing a Lomachenko and starting off with a 12 rounder. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Not quite that far.
I mean, he had, like, you know, 300 amateur fights or something.
400.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
So, I mean,
ridiculous.
That's different.
With only one loss. That's incredible.
Yeah, and
incredible.
He avenged it.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense, and it's incredible.
That
man.
Guy's a freak.
Yeah. He's next level.
But yeah, man. So let's jump into, like, this past year, 2019, mm-hmm. sort of highlights. Just I wanted to touch on some of my, like, favorite moments and, like, obviously what's kind of forming for 2020, that sort of thing. The biggest fight for me in the past year, not the best fight, but I'm just saying shock and just grab the casual's attention, was obviously Joshua Ruiz.
Oh,
that upset, that just had to be it. I mean,
I couldn't
MSG Ruiz in there, and I remember going
crazy.
Into that fight, like, I definitely did not, I won't try to claim that I thought Ruiz was gonna win that. I won't say that.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember going into that fight, I was like, you know, I think, like, Ruiz might make this competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think Joshua was just gonna go in there and wash him out right away, because I was looking at Ruiz, I'm like, all right, like, yeah, he's lost one fight in a split decision or majority decision to Joseph Parker
no joke.
In his hometown,
mm-hmm.
which, like, a lot of people thought that Ruiz kind of got robbed in that fight. It was
mm-hmm.
very close.
Yeah.
So people, I mean, obviously they discounted him and what happened happened. But
right.
I mean, like, that was just ridiculous. And then, you know, I was a little disappointed, honestly, in the rematch, because I'm conflicted.
I know.
Like, I think, is Joshua the better fighter? Yes. But Ruiz, I still think, like, if they do it a third time, he could easily knock him out again, because he just didn't show up right in that rematch. And, like,
at all.
It just gave, now there's question, like, what if? And
mm-hmm.
it's like, I just wish he came ready again, so we really know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for the first fight, man, I didn't personally know who Ruiz was before that. I mean, you did the research, like, oh, okay, he's fought this person, he only has one loss, so he's actually pretty good. But, like, you remember Pokemon?
Yeah.
No disrespect to Ruiz, but he looks like a Snorlax. Yeah. Like, he just looks like super big and like round and like just like friendly.
But he's fast, though.
Fast he is, bro. And the thing with Joshua, he came in, his mistake was just to do like bodybuilding. So he was stiff, didn't have, you know, conditioning, stuff like that.
He was looking big as hell for that first fight.
Yeah, he was super jacked, but that's not what you need for boxing. The thing is with Joshua, I still stand true to this. He's a chinny type of guy. You can tap him and he gets hurt. But at the same time, I think that a lot of people, myself included, for that fight, forgot how good of a boxer he is, because he's, for like the past like 2 or 3 fights before that, he's been coming in super, super bulked up. So he's not showing the type of boxing skill that he really has that he showed in the rematch. Granted, in the rematch, like you said, Ruiz came in living the fame. You know, he was living a celebrity life, overnight celebrity. If you notice, in the weigh-in, he didn't take off his shirt. He didn't take off his shirt until the last second because he wanted to show how big he was, you know, in the actual fight. I think that if Ruiz does train, and he gained 16 pounds for this fight, that's inexcusable. He's almost 300 pounds, inexcusable. If he does train hard for the third one, which I think they'll do, he has to lose the 16 plus another 16. You know, he has to come down significantly, like at least 30 pounds lighter, maybe even 40 if he can do that. And with the speed that he has with his hands, explosiveness, you never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
No, I should credit like Joshua, obviously. I mean, like he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, he came in and he lost 11 pounds of muscle.
Yeah.
He just boxed the shit out of him.
Yeah. Like, you can't be mad at him for that. He did smart things.
But there is that side to it as well. Like even like Robert Garcia, I saw like Ellie Setback little interview, he's like always in their gym with Mikey and all those guys, and they're like, yeah, like, you know, Joshua did everything to not get knocked out again.
Very true.
And that's also true. I was like, yeah, he did. I mean, he boxed exactly how he should, but he also did not go in there to stop Ruiz.
Yeah, he didn't go in to take any risk. That's very true.
I don't know how to feel about that, because I'm like, like, you know, it'd be kind of, you kind of want him to go in there and like get that win back cleanly and say, you know, like that was a fluke kind of thing. But I mean, I guess it shows that he knows that Ruiz is dangerous and you can't.
He respects him. The thing I will say is with that is, if we're going to criticize Joshua for fighting that way, we have to criticize Mayweather for like the entire second half of his career, because all he really did was fight a Mayweather style fight. Intelligent touch move, clinch when you have to, break, spin him out. He didn't really do anything different than an intelligent fighter who knows this person can potentially hurt me. I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to get the W. I do feel you. Like, you get, you
it's
get
just because he got knocked out.
Yeah, you get so stopped like... that bad. You want to, you know, get that
back,
type of vengeance for sure. But I'm not mad at him, man. He looked like a pure athlete, a great boxer, and they are going to do a third fight. There's too much money to not do
it. Yeah. Do you think they do it? I don't think they do it right away, though, right? No.
I mean, they did this right away, technically. I mean, Joshua, look, usually if you get, like, stopped like that and you lose 4 belts in one night to Snorlax, Ruiz, you're... Most people would want to do like maybe a tune-up fight to get their confidence back. Josh went right back to it.
Yeah.
So as long as they get the numbers right in the contract, I think they'll just run it straight right back. And Ruiz just has to get in the gym. I heard he didn't get into the gym until like 2 months after.
His trainer wanted
like that. Something that's like crazy about that card. That was the card with Jake and Logan Paul and them on it?
That was a different one. Yeah.
Different card. All right, so with that, just off topic. But the fact that we now have YouTube dudes coming in, banking millions.
I know, that was
salute to them, but it just shows, like, you have, on the undercard, you have genuine boxers who eat, sleep, and breathe
that
boxing.
That was the card. It was, I think the main event was Logan Paul versus KSI.
Yeah, KSI.
Main was Billy Saunders. Can't remember who he fought.
Yeah.
And Devin Haney was on that card as well.
Yeah.
And
one of my boys from Brooklyn, Nikita Bobby,
he fought before.
Yeah,
yeah. He looked great, too.
Yeah.
His opponent, that was ridiculous.
It was kind of weird.
Yeah,
but
that was
weird. Nikita's a beast. I've sparred him.
Yeah,
he's
no,
mad
he
hard.
Is.
Yeah.
He's a star coming up.
Yeah, for sure. But it's like you see these people who eat, sleep, boxing, and then they're getting paid just a mere fraction of what the YouTube dudes who aren't, you know what I mean? That's just interesting to me. I'm not going to knock them. hustle, get your money. If the people are willing to pay, see it, it's cool. But I feel like boxing has been like infiltrated in a sense.
No, I hear you. I was thinking about, I'm a little conflicted on that as well. Like I've talked about it before. You know, Eddie Hearn, DAZN are obviously kind of like spearheading that like movement. You know, Logan Paul's brother is fighting at the end of this month, and now Antonio Brown, like they're saying like he might get in, and I'm like, you know, where is this headed? Like, I like the first one, I didn't have too much of a problem with it because I'm like, all right, at the end of the day, they're bringing a ton of new eyeballs.
Very true.
You know, I'd imagine Billy Joe Saunders is getting paid more because he's probably, you know, he's getting pay-per-view cut or downloads, whatever.
Something, exactly, subscription.
So on that side, I was like, you know, I'm kind of okay with it, but where are we going with this? Like, is it just going to be mixed events where you're having, like, I don't know if I'm really down for that.
It looks like it, honestly. I mean, the thing is, it's just where's the money?
Yeah.
And the money now is just with, like, YouTubers in a sense. Not solely with them, but they do bring in a lot. I can't, it's just, as a fighter, if I know I'm on a card and I'm going to get paid like $20,000 and I live, eat, and sleep boxing, and this person just trains for like 2-3 months, does YouTube stuff, and he's getting paid like $20 to $50 million, I'm probably going to feel some type of way about that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
At the same time, I guess I need to start a YouTube channel.
You know what I mean? Yeah, no, I hear you, man. It's kind of a weird time. I hope they don't go like overboard with it. I mean, if they want to do these events, fine. Maybe have some younger guys like on the undercard, but like I don't want to see top of the line fighters mixed in with these. No, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a smack in the face.
But it is interesting what DAZN's doing. Like, I do like their model, like of the you know, subscription based, and they're signing all of these new, stars and up and coming guys like a Devin Haney, and you know, they just picked up Mikey Garcia, and I do like what they're doing. It'll be interesting what they do in 2020. You know, obviously with Joshua signed with them, Canelo has that record-breaking deal with DAZN.
Incredible.
He had a great 2019. I'm very interested to see what he does in 2020.
Yeah.
Mostly from like a weight.
He's trying to go like light heavy and stuff.
Well, yeah, his last fight was light heavy against Kovalev.
Yeah.
And that's something I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about too. Is you know, he clearly has found a home to an extent of where he wants to fight weight wise. I would say super middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 168, maybe stay at light heavy, but it seems like he doesn't want to be cutting that much weight anymore. Which I think is a good thing. I mean, I think weight cutting as a whole is obviously kind of a necessary evil, but it obviously has its negative effects. And definitely, you know, I've seen one of your posts in the past about a time you fought in Puerto Rico.
Oh man!
You know, you had a crazy weight cut. So I mean, if you want to dive into that.
All right, well, yeah, that was a crazy story. And the even crazier, the opponent that I fought, did you hear about the guy who died? He got killed, Max Dadashev.
Dadashev.
His opponent, that's the guy that I fought in Puerto Rico, the guy who killed him. So pretty much it was after the 2015 Golden Gloves when I quit my job, Vlad TV, whatever. I had just lost. Tough fight, but my head, that whole Golden Gloves was crazy. My head wasn't even there. Like, I arrived at the Barclays Center, and my coach at the time, who literally probably trained with me no more than like 5 to 7 times from like January until like I think the end of April, because when I left Vlad TV, I told my coach, yo, bro, would you mind if I like don't pay you until after the Golden Glove, just so I can, I'm living off my savings right now. You know, he said no problem. But then when he said no problem, he stopped showing up. And when I get to the Barclays Center to fight Rich, I see my coach outside like cursing, screaming, and I'm just like confused. I'm like, yo, what's going on? Oh, I didn't get my book renewed, so I can't work your corner. They're not letting me in. And I was just like, it just threw me off. So my head was like somewhere else. That was a rough time. But yeah, so pretty much right after that, I took off like 6 weeks. I just like stopped boxing. I was like just kind of like frustrated and fed up. and I was with my ex-girlfriend at the time, and I kind of just dove back into my old habits. I'm gonna be honest, I was like drinking, smoking, partying, just doing just regular life stuff. I ballooned up. I was like 165, 166, and I used to fight at 141. I got a call 2 weeks before the fight from the president of like the New York amateur circuit, Ray Quadrado, and he was like, yo, Mike, I got a fight in Puerto Rico. Do you want? And I was like, hell yeah, Puerto Rico, like get a trip, fight, why not? Sure, I'm down. He's like, are you in shape? I lied. I was like, yeah, I'm super sharp right now. He was like, are you at weight? I was like, yeah, bro, I'm underweight. Super lied. Like I said, I'm like 165, 66.
I'm underweight.
Super, yeah. And he was like, been sparring? I'm like, every day. I haven't sparred in like 6 weeks. I'm sitting on the couch. So once I got off the phone with him, she used to live, well, I lived at the time. We used to live at 96th Street in Columbus. I got dressed. I put on like 5 hoodies, like a North Face jacket, 3 pairs of sweatpants, like Timberlands. And it was cold outside, and I was also trying to cut weight. I went running from 96 in Columbus all the way down to Battery Park and back. Damn. And yeah, it was rough. And like this is off of 6 weeks not doing anything. And I remember I left my wallet intentionally in the apartment so that I had no choice to like cop out and hop on the train. So on the run back, I'm like stopping in parks, laying on benches, and I'm like dying. I'm like, oh my God. It was like 15.1 miles like total, something insane. I go back
in Tim's.
In Tim's, bro. Yeah, in Tim's, yeah. That's the icing on top. Oh, in Tim's. God. It was rough, bro. It was rough. I cut like probably, I used to cut weight faster back then, so I cut like, I don't know, like 8 pounds, something like that. It was like nuts.
On that,
yeah, alone. Like I was sweating so much. I had like the thermal.
Oh yeah, I mean 15 miles, yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of water weight. But then I got back in the gym like 2 days later, and one of the guys I used to spar with like consistently back then, I used to pretty much, by the time I left the gym in the finals, the Golden Gloves, I used to get the best of him like almost every single time. When I got back in to prepare for that fight in Puerto Rico, he was destroying me. And that's when I knew, I was like, yo, this is about to be a problem. Like, I shouldn't be getting beat by this dude right now. So I cut the weight. I look skinny, unhealthy. I look like the dude from Memento, that movie. Just mad unhealthy. Get out to Puerto Rico. They let us weigh in the day before. It was like kind of like a pro style, which is pretty cool.
So when you were going through this weight cut, though, were you like limiting, you were obviously limiting food and water,
yo,
right?
It wasn't much
of a science to it, probably.
Yeah,
right?
I didn't study stuff back then. Yeah. I would just do what I did. Like, yeah, I would probably
just felt terrible.
Yeah, yeah, horrible. I would eat like little Gerber cans of baby food. I would have like maybe a piece of like fish that was literally like this cube, and then like 2 peanuts. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was just like, I can't eat a lot and I can't drink a lot. I would have maybe like Pedialyte, like a capful, every like 2 hours. Like, I was dehydrated. I looked very unhealthy. It was awful. Like, cutting weight is, any boxer would tell you, probably the most miserable part of boxing and mm-hmm. just fight training. But when I got out there, we weighed in the day before, and then I made a second mistake because I'm like, I'm so starving and like parched that I want to just replenish everything that I lost. So me and my boy Christian, we went to this buffet. And he did like, you know, the smart things, took a regular meal, bro. And I tell you, my plate was like this. It was a mountain of food. It was huge. It was insane. And I ate like all of that to the point where there was like just pains like in my stomach. I was just like, yo, I ate too much. I'm hurt right now.
Yeah.
And I had stomach pains like up until the next day, like when I got to the venue for the fight. I ended up fighting, like I said, that guy Subrio Matias, who killed Max Dadashev.
Yeah.
And he dropped me twice in the first round with body shots. I had to get up, fight through it. I was like, I'm not coming out here to get stopped. It was also televised in Puerto Rico, so I'm like, I'm not getting stopped by anybody.
And no headgear.
No headgear.
And an amateur belt.
Amateur belt, no headgear. And the dude hit like a brick. So I was judging myself. I'm like, yo, am I like soft? Like, what's wrong with me? Like, this dude is hurting me right now, fit for real. But
Do you feel like aside from him hitting hard, that weight cut, I mean, it had to.
The weight cut, but what was then the effect on the overeating?
Because
my body, like I was like bloated and cramped. I couldn't actually take, like normally, like I used to might still hit hard, but I'm not gonna fold like that. Like, it was literally like I'd never been hurt like that from body shots before, and I think it was from overeating mm-hmm. the day before.
You feel slow in there?
Slow, yeah. Sluggish. Felt like my stomach was moving around. It was just bad. It was bad. Yeah. No excuse, but this is the actual story behind it.
Yeah.
And he dropped me a third time in the third round with the body shot. My eye was black, had like a busted lip. But salute to that ref. He let me keep fighting because a lot of refs would have just waved it off. But I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. And I finished the fight. But yeah, I was judging myself. I'm like, yo, like, am I soft or does this guy hit hard? And then come and find out, yeah, he hits hard. He's stopped everyone he's fought. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But that weight cut, man, it's no joke. No joke.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of videos and stuff coming out with weight cutting, kind of like showing the dangers of it how extreme it is. And I would say more on the MMA side, honestly, like in terms of fighters and people like putting videos out there. I haven't seen too many boxers. I don't know, for whatever reason, but obviously it's a big part of boxing as well. But yeah, I mean, that weight cutting, I mean, one, you can't be your best self the next day, even if you rehydrate. And then also the hydration of your brain, like you're definitely more chinny.
Yeah. Things hurt you a lot more.
Dangerous. I mean, you know, sad to bring it up, but Patrick Day, like his passing, terrible.
Horrible.
You know, you just think, you know, I know people said he used to cut a ton of weight and
he was a little bulky before
those facts, those factors, you know, it just makes you think like, damn, like, you know, these guys, this weight cutting is, it's an issue.
Yeah, it is. Honestly, it really is.
So it's good. It's good to see Canelo and you know, even on the MMA side, like McGregor's fighting, you know, Cerrone, at 170, and you know, that's more towards his natural weight, because he used to get down to 145, looked like a skeleton. Ridiculous. But it's good to see, I guess, you know, some of these guys in MMA and now Canelo in boxing seem like they are trying to stay more around their natural weight.
It makes more sense. I mean, I do know why people cut weight, because ultimately, if let's say your natural weight is like 160, but you're going to fight a guy who cuts from like 185, you're not necessarily going to fight that person because they're going to naturally hit a little bit harder and heavier. So you want to cut down lower so you pack more of a punch. I understand it. But yeah, the weight cut itself, it just depletes you of like so much.
Yeah. And Floyd, I don't think he really ever cut much weight at all.
Floyd was a different level of discipline.
Yeah.
Floyd, I think also because he boxed since he was so young, his body was just conditioned to just staying like at that like low weight.
Yeah.
But he would also, he's a person, he would tell you, yeah, I go out to the club, I eat fried chicken, I eat some French fries and stuff, and then I go and I run 8 miles before I go home. So his
because he didn't drink or smoke or anything, so he would like be in the club, but it wouldn't matter because he's just hanging out.
Yeah, it was different level.
I remember him like posting, you know, I think like in the Madonna lead ups and stuff, because Madonna had a pretty big weight cut, you know, Floyd, like he's always trying to mess with people like mentally, so he'd be posting himself like at IHOP eating pancakes and like all this stuff like before the fight, because it's like he really didn't have to struggle in that sense, because he was usually already on weight and he didn't care that he was a smaller guy, because he relied on his skills, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Which, you know, that's the best way to do it. But I mean, not everyone has his skills, right? So I mean, to get an advantage any way you can, I get why people do it, but it's just like, man, like this is intense when guys are dropping 20 plus pounds. Like,
I think that some people they have like a mental block in terms of like accepting the fact that, yo, like I can have success at a higher weight. Some people think that they're only going to have success at whatever weight they're used to fighting. And even if they get older and it becomes harder to cut the weight, I think that they just mentally are like, you know what, I shouldn't go up. Guys hit harder, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think that like doubts kind of play into that as well. Honestly, that's what I think. But
I hear you.
Yeah, that weight cut is rough, man.
For the heavyweight division, just to talk about in 2020, kind of the landscape we got ahead of us. So just to lay it out there, we have Wilder, obviously, fighting Fury in February. Yeah. So, I mean, massive rematch. Everyone knows that. And then we got Joshua hanging around, and he has all these mandatories, like for his belt, like mandatory defenses. So people are saying like it could be Usyk, Pulev maybe, and you know, if he doesn't take those, he could be forced to drop one of those belts by those belt commissions,
right?
Which is like, I hate that. I hate that, because one, you look at, you know, ideally you would have boxing be like the UFC model in terms of there's one weight division, that's one it. Champion.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, in boxing, there's four recognized belts. And, you know, Deontay has WBC, Joshua has the rest, and then Tyson has, doesn't even have a belt. He just has the lineal championship. Mm-hmm. So it's like these mandatories, man, if they hold up what's supposed to happen, like in my mind, it was a Final Four,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Joshua and Ruiz. Joshua won. He's in the finals, and now we're waiting for Fury,
right?
And Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
But it's looking like that might not be what's next, which it kind of sucks, you know. Like everyone wants to see Joshua versus Wilder.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to see Fury as well. I think Fury would outbox Joshua in a decision.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, I think so.
But I think Wilder would knock Joshua to the moon.
I think so too. I think so too. Yep.
Because I mean, I just to talk about Wilder, I mean, like, this dude, I just think his one punch power
is insane.
Like Teddy Atlas said, it's the hardest heavyweight one punch power he's ever seen.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously that says a lot. He's, you know, with Tyson and
everybody.
And he's seen everybody. And it's like, man, like Wilder, this dude, he hits different. And I think his overall boxing skill is a little bit, like, misunderstood. I don't know if you would agree with that.
I think so. No, I think it's misunderstood and it's undervalued and, like, underappreciated because he can box. The only thing is he, I think, mentally relies on the fact that he can hit so hard that he doesn't do all of the effective boxing things that he could do if he actually just took off some of the power from his shots. He looks for the one punch. Wilder versus Ortiz too. All he's doing pretty much the whole fight through a couple little overhands, maybe a 1-2.
Lost every round.
The thing with Wilder is he'll throw, he's kind of, the only thing else I'll say, he's kind of predictable. He'll throw like a 1-2, maybe a jab, a 1-2-3, or like an overhand right, like or a 1-1-2, double jab cross, throws that too. Otherwise, he's just doing this. He paused. But then the punch stats are counting these as punches. They're like, oh, Wilder threw 20 more. No, he didn't. Wilder threw 20 punches in the entire fight. He didn't throw any more punches than his opponent.
Yeah.
He said it. He said, you know, they have to be perfect for 12 rounds. I have to be perfect for 2 seconds. It's very true, and it's kind of unfair. But, it's true. I think that his boxing is, though, underappreciated. And
I think he's got a chin, too.
He has an A1 chin, solid chin. I mean, he might get knocked back, maybe wobble, but he's not dropping. He's not.
No, yeah, I don't think he's ever been dropped. I mean,
hurt
Ortiz
like
in their first matchup, he definitely, like,
yeah,
that
he,
was crazy. I thought
him,
Ortiz was, like, going to finish him at one point,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, what you said about the pawing, too, the way he blinded Ortiz, like, he set him up. He just guided him. He guided him over, and it's like, if you...
2 more inches.
Yeah.
Right there, yep.
Like, if you just relax for a second, it's like, that's it. That's all he needs. He just needs, like, one...
And the crazy part about the right hand, you didn't see him wind anything up. It was just...
No, which was unusual,
right,
honestly.
Yeah.
A little bit. Because, like, he usually comes in for the finish, like...
And this was
just like right off, boom.
That one honestly didn't even look like he threw it. Like he didn't try to throw it hard.
Right?
He was just like, all right, oh, I got him, guys. You know, it's like one of those. The thing is, for what they're doing right now with the Wilder and Fury going at it for the rematch, I feel like, because in what we talked about earlier about boxing being so focused on having that perfect record, they're kind of compromising like future matchups, because Joshua, when he lost to Ruiz, all Joshua, Fury, and Wilder have to do is just stay undefeated, and they can continue to get fights amongst each other and make big fights happen. But once you make one of those people take a loss, it just drops their stock so much in today's society. And it potentially, like, let's say Wilder loses to Fury, then people might say, oh, I don't even want to see him versus Joshua anymore, and compromise a fight that we could, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
That fight is so interesting.
The Fury Wilder?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like, who do you have winning that?
Oh, man. Like, I got to go with Wilder.
Okay.
I think Wilder catches him.
The one punch?
I think he catches him, yeah.
Okay.
I think he could go, it could happen in the 12th round.
That's the thing.
It could
happen
in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But I basically, the way I see the fight playing out is basically, I doubt Tyson Fury's gonna do what he says he's gonna do. Like, he was like, I want it to be like Hearns and Hagler, right. Like Hagler Hearns, like, no come out way. And just firefight right away, like first man fault. Like, nah,
no way.
I think he's gonna come out,
no way,
box, probably win every round, and then I think Wilder's just gonna catch him though.
That 2 second dip. Yeah.
I think he's going to catch him this time, and it's going to be a wrap. I mean, I think the first time Fury was nearly perfect, and he still got put on the canvas twice. Obviously the last knockdown, he doesn't even know how he got up from that. Like, credit to him for getting up. Like, it's unbelievable.
That was incredible, yeah.
Like, one of the more exciting fights I've ever seen. One of the craziest rounds of, like, all time, because he not only got pinned to the canvas, then got up and won the rest of the round.
That's the
So, I mean, arguably, I mean, Tyson probably won that first fight, I would say.
I think he won. I think that
not mad at the draw at all.
Yeah, when he dropped him a second time, I'm like, all right, that just gives the judges a reason to save Wilder from suffering his first loss, and then therefore preserving potential money and matchups in the future.
Yeah.
You know,
I wasn't mad at the draw because I'm like, Fury.
Yeah, two times hitting the canvas against...
One knows how he got up anyways, so...
It was incredible.
So,
I feel like that was like a movie. I'm like, this doesn't happen in real life.
Oh, my God. His whole story and everything, too. Yeah, like, man. Crazy. Yeah. I mean, I love Fury, too. Like, I'm a fan of both.
I think, in my opinion, Fury, I think, is the best heavyweight boxer around right now.
Yeah,
no doubt. He's like a modern day... I'm going to say this, and people might, like, crucify me, but... He's like kind of like a modern day Muhammad Ali in a sense. You could tell like that's his whole style, was just, you know, the showboating, the loose like twitchy type of motions, the jabs that he throws. He could turn southpaw too. He's super skilled. But yeah, Wilder's literally a wild card. You never know. You absolutely never know.
You think you're gonna go with Fury in there?
I went with Fury in the first one off of boxing. I'm gonna go with Fury off of boxing.
Decision.
Nah, he's not. If he stops Wilder, I'll be surprised. He's not stopping Wilder, I don't think. And if he does actually come out Hearns versus Hagler style, that's foolish. But hey, yo, live your best life. That's what you want to do. But I got Fury winning by decision. However, we just said Wilder's a wild card. Those 2 seconds, you never know what can happen. So
I think they could probably run that back for a third time, regardless of the outcome.
Totally. Yeah.
Unless Wilder comes out and just like sparks him in the first couple rounds and just makes a statement, and then he's just like, give me Joshua. Like,
tell your mandatories
to like fuck off. Like, I'm ready, you know?
Facts.
Which I would love to see too. America's heavyweight champ just like spark Fury and then just say, Joshua, like, it's on. Like, there's no one else. Like, it's me and you now.
Yeah.
And, like, throw them in MSG or, like, throw them probably in Vegas, but, like.
Right. If maybe they'll go back to Middle East. I don't know. Who do you think will win between Usyk and Joshua?
That's a really interesting fight, too. Because, I mean, Usyk, honestly, I wasn't that impressed in his heavyweight debut.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the standpoint of, like, his power. I don't think his power at heavyweight is gonna translate that well. I think obviously he's tremendously skilled and that's the thing, like, is he gonna beat Joshua on points? Like, are they gonna is he capable of doing that? But then also, are the judges going to give him that? Like,
there's such a machine behind
Joshua.
Yeah,
like, are they really going to let Usyk win like a majority decision? So it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I think Joshua probably gets that win because I don't think Usyk has enough to stop Joshua, even though Joshua is proven to be like a little chinny. I think after that Ruiz experience, he probably knows now, like, I have to box a certain way, most likely.
Right.
So I would say he probably tries to implement that style against Usyk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a close competitive fight, but that's kind of how I see that playing out.
I feel you there, too. I think that if Joshua boxes, like, anyone the way that he boxed Ruiz, now, granted, not everyone's going to be pushing 300, so they're not going to be as slow, but... If he boxes anyone the way that he just boxed Ruiz, I think he'll actually give Fury problems. I still think Fury would win because that's Fury's whole style. And I think he could potentially stay away from that one punch from Deontay Wilder. Potentially. That's a big potential. Because I've seen Deontay Wilder, he dropped a dude with a jab to the body in his early like pro career. Like, that's unheard of, a jab to the body. Like,
yeah.
That power is freakish, man. What's your take on Clarissa Shields and Leila Ali if they get in the ring?
Yeah, man. They've been talking about it. Yeah, I saw them mention that, and like Leila obviously was like talking a lot of trash about that, and mm-hmm. she's 42, I think now. You know, obviously been out of the ring for some time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be curious to see it, no doubt. I mean, I think it'd be great for women's boxing, 100%.
Right.
I don't know what weight they would do it at, like maybe 168 or something.
They would have to be a little bit up.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I think Clarissa is amazing. Like, she's an amazing talent, and mm-hmm. like, she's very young.
Right, for sure.
And like, Leila, it's just like, I don't know. Like, she's 42. She's been out of the game for a while. Like, maybe if you give her a year, like, to really get back.
That's what Clarissa said. She said, I'm willing to give her a year to get back and train. My thing, I mean, Clarissa's been so active that, like, it just makes sense. And she's proven how good she is to just, you know, obviously bet on her.
Yeah.
Regardless, it would be an interesting fight that would obviously raise, like, you know, the price ceiling for women's boxing, the notoriety. That would probably become the first pay-per-view women's fight ever, without
a
doubt.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Leila too is like, she's shown, I think she has 20 knockouts or there. And she and Clarissa has
like
one or two
stops.
Like, her last fight was like the first time she like
actually
put someone on the canvas.
Yeah, she's not a hard
Which
puncher.
Is not like a knock on her. It's just not mm-hmm. what she does. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting. I think Leila could like maybe hurt her. I mean, she's definitely gonna be the bigger,
possibly, yeah,
the bigger fighter in mm-hmm. there. And Clarissa has been put down.
Yeah, about to say, she's been dropped before.
So it'd be interesting.
Clarissa's thing for me, like, she's a very skilled boxer. She's flashy when she wants to be, but there's times when you watch, like, from all her fights, she'll hit her opponent with some like hard stuff, maybe like wobble them a little bit, and then instead of going for the kill and following up, she'll step back and she'll like do a little showboat, and I'm like, yo, that right there was your knockout, but now you're gonna go for the full 10 rounds. Do you think the women's boxing should be 12 rounds in 3 minutes?
No,
you wanna keep it 10 rounds, 2 minutes?
I mean, yeah, I think where it's at is fine. Mm-hmm. And honestly, just from like a viewing perspective,
yeah,
I think it's just like the best model for growing it right now.
Okay, I hear you.
If that makes sense, because like, I think Clarissa's a star. Like, mm-hmm. we can continue to market her, like, keep it how it is now, and like, I would love to see her as a co-main event for like Canelo, like something big, you know, like to throw her on the co-main,
right,
like that.
Right.
And not that she like doesn't deserve the full time slot mm-hmm. of like a 12 round fight,
mm-hmm.
but it's just like, I just think it caters best right now for the general public.
I hear you.
I think that's just, you know, it's just reality. Like, there's not as much of an interest in women's boxing as there is men's boxing. Yeah. So it's like, are people excited about Clarissa? Yes. But like, you know, mm-hmm. I think right now that's fine, you know, but I'd love to see her as like a co-main event for, you know, something in 2020, maybe with Canelo, or maybe a heavyweight showdown, you know, throw her on one of those big cards just to get her exposure even more so.
Yeah, that
and then, you know, maybe a year down the line, we could do a 12 with her and Leila,
mm-hmm.
Because the interest would be there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that really makes sense in terms of the Leila interest, but I don't know if you see what I'm saying.
I hear you. Yeah, build it up with the format it already has, because it's been rising. And then from there, try to make some adjustments to the timetable. And yeah, I hear that.
Yeah.
I hear that.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there's so many exciting things in 2020. Mm-hmm. Like, boxing has great stars right now. The heavyweight division is alive more than ever. The welterweight division's on fire. We got Pacquiao, Thurman, Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford.
I was going to say, if Errol, because the thing is this, Errol is now a variable. Like, before, he was just like the certified truth. He got into that horrific car crash. Thankfully, he's still alive, because that was crazy. Do you think he'll come back in his next
fight?
Wild,
right?
Same?
I mean, did you see the video of that?
That was insane, bro.
I mean, he's...
It looked like a movie. it didn't even look real. Like,
yeah,
it
was, I mean, just, that's just like, he's so blessed to be
so
alive.
Blessed, yeah, and I pray that that doesn't
and
happen.
And uninjured,
again.
Like, mm-hmm. apparently.
Apparently. Which you is, never know. They might just say that, but hey, we saw him at what fight was it?
I saw the interview you're talking about. Yeah, he seemed like he was. His voice was a little different.
It was a little different. His speech was slightly like slurred, or like it was like harder for him to like, I don't know, speak as clearly or something.
They said he had dental.
Yeah, he lost some teeth, I think. So that's the thing. You never know actually in reality how hurt he might have been. He might have had like two broken ribs, but they're not going to say that, you know.
Yeah.
They just don't want no one to know he has a weakness.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is interesting. And he had like facial lacerations.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like,
you could see like some of the scars like around his eyes and stuff.
Yeah, that definitely made me think about. Like, is he gonna cut easy now, mm-hmm. or
yeah
it's a variable there. So
I do want to see, like, one of the big epic fights I want to see is obviously him and Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just hoping that it doesn't become like tarnished because Errol has like a lingering injury, mm-hmm. that, you know what I mean, that mm-hmm. affects his ability. Who would you have winning that outside of any potential Errol injuries?
I would go with Errol, I think.
I would go with Errol, too.
And I love Terrence, and I would say Terrence is honestly, like, top five pound mm-hmm. for pound right now. But I just think style-wise, if he were to, like, he showed in his last fight against that Russian dude, the Mean Machine, or mm-hmm. and he went toe-to-toe with him. And like engaged in that war
mm-hmm.
when he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And like if he did that with Spence, I don't know.
Nah,
I think he's gonna get caught. Like mm-hmm. Porter, obviously that's his style, to come forward and be in your face, and like his chin is crazy.
Yeah.
And even he
insane.
Got dropped right. by Spence. So I just think in that sort of a firefight, which I think it would be.
Right.
Great fight. I think it'd be awesome. But mm-hmm. I think Spence.
Something that I noticed about Crawford in the fight with Mean Machine was that when he I think he's a little bit too focused on going southpaw for the kill and staying southpaw, because Mean Machine was giving him problems. I noticed that Terrence throws his right hook.
He wobbled him a little, yeah.
And he throws his right hook kind of wide. So, like, when he's throwing the hook, Mean Machine was coming down the middle and catching him with clean shots. I feel like if he fought Spence would just come right down the middle. I feel like, honestly, if he fights Porter would give him a lot of problems too, because
Porter
like,
gives anyone problems.
Yeah, he's
dude.
Just a pit bull, man.
Like, Porter is just an absolute dog.
He's
yeah.
a monster, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting one that I would like to see too.
Yeah.
I think, actually, Pacquiao, potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially, because of the speed and everything, explosiveness. He's better than you think he is until you stand in front of him. I think Pacquiao potentially can come right down the middle when Terrence is doing one of his wide shots. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, you can't count Pac-Man out.
Yeah. I'm also like a diehard Pac-Man fan. Like, I lost $100 when he lost to Mayweather. So, you know, I got to ride for Pac till the day.
Yeah, no, he's a legend.
Yeah, it's my guy.
But, yeah, man, I mean, there's so many fights to talk about in 2020. Like, mm-hmm. we could talk all day, bro. We'll have to have you on again.
I'm with you, for sure.
This was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it.
And this is our first one, you know, in this studio setting.
Mm-hmm.
So we kicked it off right with you. So I appreciate you.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah.
Appreciate you too, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming
on.
Awesome. That was the first episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Maybe tell the people where they can follow you and all that.
Yeah. Social media, I'm not like too heavy on it, but Instagram, that's like the main thing I do. You can follow me at Hughes, it's my last name, Hughes, and then Hughesin, I-N, Hughesin.
Awesome. And then follow us on Instagram and Twitter, Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. This is going to be on all platforms
awesome.
Soon, so make sure to check it out. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.